This is the Well-Being Report on WDIY, discussing the vital conditions for health and well-being in the Lehigh Valley. Featuring WDIY's Margaret McConnell and Dr. Samantha Schock, Executive Director at the Leonard Parker Poole Institute for Health. Now, here's Margaret and Samantha.
Good evening and welcome to the Well-Being Report. This program is generously supported and co-hosted by our friends at the Leonard Parker Poole Institute for Health. I'm your co-host, Margaret McConnell, the Executive Director here at WDIY. On this show, we talk about the local drivers that impact health and wellness and the collective efforts by the Leonard Parker Poole Institute for Health and Lehigh Valley Health Network in addressing community health. As always, to continue this discussion, I welcome my co-host, Samantha Schock, Executive Director at the Institute.
Hi, Margaret. Good to be here.
Hi. So tell us a little bit about what we talked about last time.
Sure. Yeah, we've been making our way through the vital conditions or the assets needed within places for people to have resources available to them to be successful over time. Last month, we talked about meaningful work and wealth, and by that we mean having access to jobs that pay enough money to be able to afford day-to-day life, having things that fulfill you in terms of work and careers, and opportunities for training in order to be able to advance within your career. And so we highlighted some really good efforts happening across the Valley and in Allentown, including with the City of Allentown and Allentown Works, Healthcare Futures at LVHN, Century Promise, and Ripple Community Inc. and Cohesion Network. And so it was great to hear a smattering of the things that are happening, which is just a drop in the bucket of the many good efforts that are underway, but really emphasizing the importance of giving people opportunities to gain training, gain access to jobs that they are interested in being at and can grow in over time. And today's conversation will sort of build on that as well, which is
okay. Great. So today we're going to talk about lifelong learning as a vital condition. So that'll stem right along with you're in the workforce and how do you continue or grow in the workforce
exactly.
With lifelong learning. And our guest today is Kate Kelly. She's the Assistant Director for Community Initiatives at Community Services for Children, or CSC. She's been in this position since October 2020 and works actively with families, kids, and neighbors in Allentown, especially those in the Franklin Park neighborhood. Kate oversees the Uplift After School program twice a week at Ripple Church, a safe space where kids can connect, do arts and crafts, and seek homework help. She also co-chairs the new Parent Advisory Board in Franklin Park. So welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So when we say lifelong learning, we're generally talking about the idea that we are all learners throughout our entire life, right? And this begins early in life with early childhood and then progresses through. And even as adults that we continue to learn and grow our skills. And how do we support that across the lifespan? Also tied to a concept, cradle to college or career, that we've talked often about on the show. So tell us a little bit about why lifelong learning is important from your perspective and what brings you to working in the early childhood education.
So I think lifelong learning keeps us curious and growing. The world is always changing and we keep learning, and it helps us stay open to new ideas and challenges. It's what keeps life interesting. That's one of the reasons I love working in early childhood education. So those early years are where the love of learning really develops. I get to be a part of helping them explore, ask questions, and build the confidence to keep learning as they grow.
So this is interesting for me that we're talking about lifelong learning, but we're starting very young.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. So it's got to be put in there early.
Early on.
Early, early.
I think that's been one of the biggest growths of the field is that we know now that early childhood really is a critical phase of development and that so much more happens than we naturally think there.
Right. So the importance of the brain development during that age. So can you share a bit about how the experiences children have in those first 5 years shape their future learning and health outcomes?
Absolutely. So the first 5 years are powerful because children's brains are developing faster than any other time in their life. The experiences they have, the relationships, the play, the different routines are all building the wiring in their brains. So when kids have a safe, loving, and nurturing environment, it helps them develop strong social skills, language, and problem-solving abilities that make school easier later on. And it also impacts their health. Early experiences affect stress levels, emotion regulation, and even things like future heart health. So when we invest in those early years, we're not just helping prepare the kids for kindergarten, we're setting them up for a lifetime of better learning, better health, and better opportunities.
Back when we first started the show, my predecessor, Ed Meehan, had on Deirdre Vashier, the CEO at Community Services for Children, where you currently are working. CSC has been a longstanding partner of both the health system and LPPIH since its inception over the last few years. And CSC has played a key role in leading our Build Health Challenge, which is an initiative that Allentown has been a part of going on 3 years now. Allentown was one of only a small handful of communities across the nation to be selected for this cohort. Can you tell us a bit about what BUILD actually stands for? We've shared this before, but I think it's a good reminder, and what our collective has been focusing on within the BUILD Challenge.
Sure. BUILD stands for Bold, Upstream, Integrated, Local, and Data-Driven, which means that it supports projects that aim for big changes but focus on the root causes of health issues, bringing different sectors together, centering community voices, and to use data to measure progress. Our collective has been really busy building community connections and opportunities in Franklin Park. We've hosted community events, we started an after-school program for kids, and we hold monthly community meetings so neighbors can have a voice in shaping the solutions. We've gathered a lot of neighborhood data to understand what families really need, and we are currently in the process of conveying those results to the community members. And I think one of our biggest wins has been bringing a mobile market, Kellen Mobile Market, with fresh produce right into Franklin Park, making healthy food easier for the families to get there. We've also partnered with our local health experts who come out and talk directly with the community about important health topics. So it's really been exciting to see everyone come together and start to make real change.
It's been an amazing journey to see the work that's happened over the last few years. We're very lucky to be in a cohort with a small number of communities across the country who are all learning on this journey with us. And we've, you know, received really important support and guidance and encouragement from our colleagues at BUILD as we've been working to make sure that the residents are centered. We knew when we started this that that was where we had the most growth, right? The biggest opportunity for growth. And so we've invested most of our time there while also sort of building some data infrastructure behind the scenes and doing some other pieces. But being connected with families under the age of five and making sure that they have access to the resources they need during that critical phase of development, I think has been really important for us as a starting point. If we don't start there, we've got nothing to build on. And so for us, it was really around how do we start there and work with Community Services for Children, who is a leading Head Start provider across this country, right? Yeah. And providing really good quality care for so many young children in this community. But we know there's a lot of other providers out there as well, and there's a lot of other groups. And so it's about everyone within that community and what families need. Kate, and having seen and been a part of all of this, can you share what that process has taught you about partnerships and collective action for early learning?
So this process has really taught me the power of partnerships and collective action. When you bring different people to the table, families, schools, health providers, and neighbors, you realize that everyone sees a different piece of the puzzle. So working together has shown me that real change happens when we share ideas, pull together our resources, and when we keep listening to each other. It's not about one organization doing everything. It's about creating the solutions together. And honestly, it's been inspiring to see what we can accomplish when we all work towards the same goal.
Sounds like something we should be doing in a lot of areas right now. I often hear you all refer to Families First in Franklin Park. Is that related and tied into this work?
Yes. So Families First in Franklin Park is actually the name of our collective. So it's the group of partners and neighbors working together to make Franklin Park a healthier, stronger community. While our work with the Build Health Challenge has been a big part of what we do, Families First goes beyond that. So we have many partners involved who bring their time, resources, and ideas to the table. It's really a team effort, and we want to make sure people know this is bigger than just one program or one organization. It's about the whole community.
What are some of the biggest wins you've seen so far, and what are some unique challenges you've specifically identified in the Franklin Park neighborhood?
So I think some of our biggest wins in Franklin Park have been seeing neighbors consistently showing up to events, showing up to the Uplift program and the community meetings, it shows how invested they are. Another win is definitely the Kellen Mobile Market. Mm-hmm. With fresh produce, which makes food accessible, healthy food accessible right in the neighborhood. A couple weeks ago, I saw a bus of individuals getting dropped off, at the mobile market, and I was like, this is amazing. So
where did they bus in from?
I have no idea where
really?
They're from. But wait, the bus waited for them. They were like on a side street.
Like Atlanta bus?
Yeah. I'm not sure. Yeah.
But so are now people coming from outside of the Franklin Park neighborhood?
It seemed like that.
That is?
It seemed like that, yeah.
So we need another mobile somewhere else.
So Kellen is also, so they're 2 days a week in Franklin Park, but they also are in Easton. But I think people are getting to know those locations.
Wow.
So, yes, if they're interested.
That's incredible.
They were previously at Resurrected Life as well, where had a big turnout. And that has, they're under construction.
Right.
So we've moved the site. And so part of it might even be, you know, some of the folks that were there coming over to the site.
Yeah, it might be for sure. Yeah.
But yeah, it's a destination.
Totally. It was awesome to see that, though. I was like, wow,
that's
great.
That's also uniting community and bringing people together from beyond just your impact area.
And it's great that the word is getting out
about
the market.
And it's an opportunity for engagement, right? So people are there getting produce and getting access to that great resource, but at the same time, we can be providing other information, sharing an upcoming event, connecting with them and saying hello, right? And so, and just, you know, more presence there in the park.
Absolutely. Yeah. A challenge that I've seen is that we do have many neighbors involved, but finding ways to reach the folks that are not involved, because there's way more in the neighborhood than what we're seeing, continues to be a challenge, and we're always trying to figure out different ways to kind of tackle that.
All right, so switching gears a little bit here to another program. Kate, you helped champion the Uplift after school program at Ripple Church, which we mentioned a little earlier. Can you describe what happens there and why it matters for kids and families?
Absolutely. So at the Uplift after school program, we offer homework help, arts and crafts, STEM activities. They always have dinner. Mm-hmm. And we really try to use that time to connect with the kids and the parents that are there. The program is consistent and a reliable part of their week, which is super important. This consistency matters for both the kids and the families. They know that they will be in a safe and loving environment every Tuesday and Thursday, which was a need in that community when we spoke to leaders that are in the community. And beyond the activities, it's a chance for kids to build healthy relationships with adult mentors, which to me is just as important as the learning itself.
Yeah, definitely.
Kate, can you take us back to when the Uplift program was first envisioned? Why did we collectively think that that was the route to go? And what were we learning along the way that made us think that creating an after-school space would be a good step towards getting to know more families?
So we know that Ripple Church is kind of the main anchor in that community. So the first thing that we did is we sat down with the pastors that work at Ripple Church, and we asked what they thought that the need was for the kids in the community. And the main thing that they said is that they felt like the kids just needed a safe space to be at least a couple days a week. Homework help would be great, but primarily it was that they had a safe space to be, so they, you know, weren't necessarily around any negative things going on in the neighborhood. That's kind of how it originated.
Okay.
And historically, there used to be a after-school program in Franklin Park and at Ripple Church, right?
There did. I believe Pastor Maritza ran that program, and it was wildly successful. The kids loved it. So I think, too, that's where they knew that the community loved something like that. So I think that that was another reason why that was recommended to us. So,
and why did that program stop?
Pastor Maritza, who was running the program and who had been a long-term consistent figure within Franklin Park, was transitioning and retiring. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, COVID was happening. And so it put a pause on the program as it formerly existed. And then as we started to sort of wrap services around and wrap these efforts around Ripple Church, we're thinking about how we could support some of the things that they either previously had or wanted to see happen.
Okay, so it was kind of rebuilding that program that they knew was successful and would have the best likelihood of being successful again.
Yes.
Great.
Yep.
And we knew the goal was to get to know more families? How do you get to know them? You provide a service that's really critical and important for them, right? That it creates that space for them to come in and to get to know Kate and the other leaders that we had. So now they know her by name and by face, right? And so that engagement piece was just really critical. And this is a way we could support their development while also engaging with them.
Mm-hmm.
What does it mean for children to have a sense of fellowship and belonging in a neighborhood space like Ripple Church? I can testify to the fact that the same kids are coming every week, the same families are there. In a space, Ripple Church is used for so many purposes, but it really is one of those neighborhood anchors there. So what have you seen in terms of the kids' growth as well and the family's growth in the time that you've been doing this?
So for me, for the children there, it's having a sense of fellowship and belonging in a neighborhood space like Ripple means that they feel seen and supported and part of a community. So it's more than just a place to go. It's a safe space where they can build friendships, explore, argue with each other, learn how conflict resolution works. And knowing that there are adults and peers who care about them is huge.
We had a neighborhood meeting last night in Franklin Park, and all the kids from Uplift stayed and were part of the conversation and gave us their input on what they would like to see. And so one shared that she's running for treasury at her school.
Yeah.
So just really great engagement and giving them a chance to share their voice and their opinions.
Yeah. So, Kate, how do you see this connecting to longer-term academic success and community well-being?
When children feel a sense of belonging and support in community spaces, it lays the foundation for long-term academic success. They develop confidence, social skills, and a love of learning that is carried into school. So at the same time, it strengthens the community. Kids who feel connected are more engaged, families feel supported, and neighborhoods become spaces where everyone looks out for each other, which I have seen firsthand in Franklin Park. So it's really a win-win for both learning and the well-being of the community.
So tying this back to health a little bit, we've talked a little bit about the connection between education and health. At the Poole Institute for Health, we think about the vital conditions as upstream drivers of health. So we know that those who have greater opportunity for educational outcomes tend to also have better health outcomes in the long term. How do you see access to equitable early childhood learning environments affecting lifelong health outcomes for kids and families, recognizing that what CSC provides is a high-quality, safe environment, and that's not necessarily what everyone has access to today?
Yes. So access to equitable early childhood learning environments is really powerful because the early years set the foundation for everything that comes later. So when kids have high-quality, supportive learning experiences, they develop stronger social skills, confidence, and problem-solving abilities, which helps them do better in school and in life. It also affects health. So safe, nurturing environments reduce stress and support emotional well-being, which can have long-term effects on things like heart health, mental health, and overall resiliency. So when families are supported alongside their children, the benefits ripple out. Healthier, more connected families mean healthier communities.
Mm-hmm. Now, Samantha, a question we usually ask, what role can hospitals, nonprofits, and community organizations play in supporting families outside the traditional classroom?
Absolutely. I think, as with all things that we talk about, it takes everyone, right? Mm-hmm. There is a role for everyone in addressing all of these issues, and education can be supported when you're sitting in a lobby somewhere and you're reading a book. It could be supported when you're at the doctor's office and there's signage there. I think, you know, healthcare professionals are really big advocates for reading and reading practices with families and ensuring that they are providing guidance to families around what an early childhood, healthy early childhood environment looks like. Our children's hospital leaders are really big advocates for this relational aspect of early childhood and ensuring that we are supporting families because we want as many people to have a basis, a foundation to start from, right? And so we all play a role, whether it's kids walking by your building, right, that are walking safely home or getting picked up or whatever it might be, that we recognize the importance of that time and the people who are providing those necessary supports during that time. So all your childcare providers, that they're all trying to provide the best environment they can. So how do we all support that collectively?
Hmm. And for both of you, what comes next as you look to the end of the Build Health Challenge period?
Yeah, I'll start, and then Kate, please add. Build Health is a 3-year initiative. And when we started this from the outset, we said this is a drop in the bucket, right? This is the first phase of what will be a long partnership. And so while we're extremely grateful for the technical assistance and support we've gotten throughout the Build Health Challenge and getting to meet some of the other communities, the work doesn't stop when that ends. And so this is us just getting started, and we need to, as Kate mentioned, really continue to get closer and closer to more families and get to know more and more people and that relational aspect. I think the other thing to tie it to is cradle to college career. So this early childhood piece is the beginning of what should be a continuum of services. It doesn't stop when kids go to kindergarten, right? And so we need to continue to develop partnerships with other childcare providers and then the school district and all the after-school programming and those who are providing those career and college pathway programs, because it's that continuum, that collective, that makes sure that kids get from, you know, you can have the best environment in birth through five, but if you then move into an environment that doesn't continue to support that, some of that benefit is going to get lost over time. So really tying it to starting at this foundation, but really building that continuum across the childhood phase, I would say.
I totally agree with that, and I can't believe that we're almost at the end.
I know.
And it's kind of strange to me because it feels like that the work has just really started. So I think for me, it's sustaining the momentum that we've built, keeping the programs going, continuing to engage neighbors, and strengthening the partnerships that we have made that have made this work possible. And hopefully we can, at some point, share what we've learned with other communities so these strategies can have an impact beyond Franklin Park. So ultimately, it's about building lasting change, not just for the duration of the Build Health Challenge, but for the long-term health and well-being of kids, families, and the whole neighborhood.
So I didn't realize that we were at the end, and maybe I missed that in our earlier conversations. But so how long has this challenge been going?
It's a 3-year challenge.
Three
so
years.
We're in our third year.
Okay,
yeah.
So this is the third year.
Yeah.
Okay, and it's a national program?
National initiative, yeah. So the Build Health Challenge, they're in their fourth cohort right now. So when they started it, as Kate said, Build is about really being bold and thinking differently about some of these complex social issues that we know impact health over time. All the same things we always talk about. So it felt very aligned for us to be a part of something like that. And so they have supported different communities across the country in each of their cohorts. There's always about 10 to 12 in each cohort, and there are these 3-year projects. But they are designed to be a way to leverage that opportunity as opposed to a start and end to a project, because we know that most of this work goes long-term and takes much longer than that. And so they're intentional about supporting communities that are interested in that long-term effort as opposed to starting something that is not likely to be finished in 3 years. And so it is a national initiative that that will continue to and have future cohorts for other to support other
communities. Other communities.
As well.
Okay. Now, does that mean that the program you talked about, the Uplift After School, does that end with Build, or is that its own separate entity?
It's under the umbrella of, but no, we won't stop it until that's not needed anymore, right? The intent, we set it up at first to say, we know we need to get to know more families and there's a need for a safe environment. I think part of our goal is to understand what other after-school programs, Community Bike Works is there, Boys and Girls Club is there. How many kids are connected to those? Where is the need? And then for us to evolve it as the need changes. So none of the work, Uplift, Families First in Franklin Park, any of it will end with Build.
Let's talk a little bit about measurements and metrics. Everybody wants to know what the outcomes are, right? So you started this program 3 years ago with kids in the program that are under five. And now they're going to be aging out and going on to the next, you know, circuit of care that Leonard Parker Pool has kind of built around Franklin Park. How will you be following these kids to see what the impact of this program has on their lifelong learning?
Yeah. While we've been building relationships, the other thing we've been doing is building a data infrastructure. And so our goal is to actually bring information across the healthcare system and the early child care system and some information from sort of key partners to say, how do we understand if we are supporting families in the ways that they need? and do that collectively so we don't have to go back to them and ask them for the information that they've already shared with organizations to begin with. So that data sharing infrastructure is also being built, which is the thing that we'll continue to track over time, learn from, be able to show impacts of what we're doing, ensure kids are going to school ready to learn, ensuring that they're getting to third grade reading levels, and that they have their families have access to resources like, you know, SNAP benefits and housing stability and all those other pieces that we talk about.
Okay.
Building on that, how has your understanding what families need in this community changed in the time that we've been doing the build or Families First in Franklin Park? How has your viewpoint changed about early childhood development or anything in there? Like, what's one thing that's sort of shifted for you as you've...
Well, I think the unique thing about the Uplift program is the fact that our target was 3 to 5, and we're serving kids from like 1 year old all the way up until 13, I would say.
Wow.
Because the need of that community is the families all come together, you know? So like the older siblings come to the program to make sure everything's good with the younger siblings. And, you know, it's kind of started to evolve. It's evolved ever since it started. You know, we had to kind of... We had to lay a lot of foundation work, building that consistency. I think we started off having like 3 kids consistently coming, and we were a staff of, it was like 3 of us that were there.
Wow.
And now we have between, I would say, 15 to 25 kids every Tuesday and Thursday. So I think that that has totally evolved how we do the program, too. You know what I mean? We originally, I had a bunch of activities planned for kids who were super, super tiny. and, you know, now we have kids that are, I would say the most of them are between like probably 8 and 11.
Wow.
You know? And a lot of that, I think, too, is when the character building skills and, you know, kind of learning those relationships, and they're starting to like become aware of a lot of things that are going on, not just in their neighborhood, but in their own, you know, their own family communities and things of that nature. So
CSC is an early child care provider. How does something like Uplift and Families First tie into, it's not, you're not providing early Head Start, right? Like
no.
You're doing something different, but how does it fit into the CSC umbrella?
Uplift fits under the Community Services for Children umbrella, because one of the things that we've realized is that families all have different needs. And that's the thing about CSC is CSC does have Head Start and early Head Start, but we also have an Early Learning Resource Center, which helps link families up with different resources in the community, whether it be mental health services, services for food, childcare subsidies, all of those things. I always see CSC as three components. I see it as Head Start, Early Head Start, the Early Learning Resource Centers, and then community initiatives. And I really think that doing the Uplift work too has been a really great way for CSC to kind of engage in the community and to build better relationships.
Okay. Yeah, great.
Yeah.
So are there any final thoughts or advice you'd like to leave our listeners with, especially parents or caregivers raising young children?
So raising young children is one of the most important and at times the most challenging jobs there is. So lean on your community, your schools, programs like Families First in Franklin Park for support, and make sure you celebrate the small wins and be kind to yourself as a parent, because it's not easy.
Thank you for sharing your time and insights with us today, Kate. It's been a great conversation.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, so we're all wrapped up today with time. I do want to invite you all. We're going to continue this conversation on lifelong learning into adulthood in our October episode, so make sure you tune in for that. Thank you both for being here, Samantha and Caitlin, for another great discussion. We hope you'll tune in next month. If you would like to listen to this program again, please go to our website, wdiy.org, the WDIY app, where the Wellbeing Report is archived, or your favorite podcast or smart speaker platform. I'm your co-host, Margaret McConnell. Thanks for listening to the Wellbeing Report. Have a great evening.
This has been the Wellbeing Report on WDIY. Thank you for listening. This episode and others are archived and available online at lppih.org and on WDIY.org and also can be accessed on your favorite podcast streaming platform.